rajas and tamas. Although it's clearly explained in more than one chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, reference is made to it in the second chapter, verse Krishna advises or admonishes Arjuna to rise himself above the three qualities. And in the 13th chapter, a hint is given as to the very origin of these three qualities. And the 14th chapter clearly explains what it is. What is it that entwineth the soul to the body? And the 17th chapter, applicable to various aspects of life. It's difficult for a student of theosophy even to understand why these qualities exist. Because they fail to understand that it is inherent in nature. This is our problem. There is an aspect of nature in man, very prominent, the corporeal body. See here, in the very opening verse of this devotional reading, what do we have? I will explain further the sublime spiritual knowledge superior to all others, by knowing which all the sages have attained supreme perfection on the dissolution of the body. That means it's the supreme ascetic stage. Then in the third shloka it says, the great Brahma is my womb, in which I place a seed. Then the footnote explains, Brahma is to be taken as Prakriti or nature. Then again, if you go to the 13th chapter, something is given that is quoted in your sacral style letter, sheet. Know that Prakriti or nature and Purusha the spirit are without beginning. Spirit and matter are co-evil, co-eternal. Know that the passions of the three qualities are sprung from nature. Nature or Prakriti is said to be that which operates in producing cause and effect in actions. Individual spirit or Purusha is said to be the cause of experiencing pain and pleasure. For spirit, when invested with matter, or Prakriti, experience the qualities which proceed from Prakriti. This is what happens. Being embodied soul is imprisoned in this body. Naturally, the lower soul partakes of the qualities that proceed from our body, Prakriti nature, which you fail to understand. And as I read from the very first sloka of this 14th chapter, it talks about the highest perfection a sage can reach, who has risen above a satyapragna stage. Now, there's a wonderful verse in Patanjali's Yoga Aphorism, which states this. This is book 4, verse 7. The work of the ascetic is neither pure nor dark, but is peculiar to itself. Underline the word peculiar to itself. It's a power inherent in the human soul. While that of others of three kinds. The three kinds of work alluded to are, one pure in action and motive, sattva, dark such as that of infernal beings, that is the general run of men, pure dark. The fourth is that of an ascetic. Therefore, the 14th chapter of the Gita, which talks about separation of from the three principles, talks about that of ascetic, which is explained here in the Yoga Aphorisms. Now, every human soul that comes into the world aspires to get rid of this personal conditioned existence in this body, either consciously or unconsciously. Of course, it's a natural desire. But before we can do that and try to understand, see, why we should do it, we should know what something about the soul. Where is this soul? Why is it here? What is its purpose in life? Before we can attain to that particular stage of mind, we have to. The precondition for this particular thing is to aspire or to make efforts towards a direction when we will be able to take means to release from the trammels of flesh and matter, this conditioned existence. Then we must attain that state of mind and heart to that state where we can sense that there is spiritual life and the very aroma of spiritual life. then before we can do that, naturally we must understand what is soul. Then enough material is given in the theosophical literature that so you're all the immortal souls, ensheathed in a physical body, incarnated here on earth, to get in touch with nature, to garner experience, and to evolve through this life pilgrimage, and the only purpose is to serve humanity. That we are all units of the one whole. And the only purpose is to serve humanity. And in order to understand, then she also gives seven principles in man, the secret doctrine, as well as the key to theosophy. And further, it's explained in the Ocean of Theosophy by Mr. Judge, the seven principles on man. The question naturally arises, what are those principles which are conditioned, which are evanescent, which are perishable? So that if we attach ourselves to those perishable things, then it will be conditioned. And what is that? Is there any item or a principle which is free from all this conditioning factor, which is always free, to which the incarnated consciousness, if it yokes itself, can it become free? These are the questions which can be answered only when you thoroughly, the seven principles in man. It should be clearly points out, yes, the seven principles are the body, the physical body, corporeal being, and the mortal astral body. Then we have the pranic current, which is a specialized aspect of jiva. Then we have the karma principle. These four form the lower quaternary or personality, which is all the time changing, which inhabits, informs the incarnated consciousness. Therefore, what happens is, what is that? It is all the time changing. It is conditioned. It is temporary. Evanescent. And with these, and the qualities, three qualities are inherent in this, the personality. Because as we read out from the Gita, yes, it is inherent in nature. It is inherent in Prakriti. The whole personality is purely a Prakriti. Although every atom is throbbing with life, prominently Prakriti. Therefore, the qualities that proceed from the Prakriti is experienced by the inhabitant. Unless there is a conjunction of soul and body, as the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita says, there can't be any entity or manifestation. You remember that verse in the 13th chapter of the Gita? Very clearly it says, yeah. Know, O chief of the Bharatas, that whenever anything, whether animate or inanimate, is produced, it is due to the union of Kshetra and Kshetrajna, body and soul. Otherwise, there is no manifestation. Purusha Prakriti must be there. The body and the soul. Therefore, when it is through that, therefore, what happens? The higher triad, the manas, buddhi, and atma, the higher triad, higher self, is the immortal entity, inhabiting, informing the personal man or the personality. Now, once you are able to understand or appreciate, there is that aspect in man which is unconditioned, which is not any of these conditions, which is changeless, to which if only incarnated consciousness yokes itself, allies itself, it can become free. But unfortunately, what happens, although we have studied the seven principles in man, we have not understood the implications thereof and applied it in our daily life. As Mr. Judge points out, one of the articles, universal applications of doctrines, we apply the teachings only partially. Without the implication of the universal application to every aspect of our life, then only we will be able to appreciate the need to release ourselves from the bondage of flesh and blood. It is the bondage of flesh and blood, the corporeal body, the personality, which is all the time conditioned by the qualities that is inherent in that, that binds us. And the various conditions are given in the 14th chapter of the Gita, which we read out. We will read out only two or three slokas there to indicate to you again. Now, see here. It says here. The three qualities called sattva, rajas and tamas, light of truth, passion or desire, indifference, darkness, are born from my nature and bind the imperishable soul to the body. Look at this. There is a free element in man, the imperishable soul, which is imperishable, to the body. It binds. How does it bind? Of course, the sattva quality, by reason of its lucidity and peacefulness, entwineth the soul. Look at the words. Entwineth the soul to rebirth through attachment to knowledge that is pleasant. The rajas is of that nature of desire, producing thirst and propensity. It, O son of Kunti, imprisoneth the ego. Imprisoneth the ego through the consequences produced from action. The quality of tamas, the offspring of indifference, it imprisons the ego in a body through heedless folly, sleep, etc., etc. See, the word imprisoneth is used for rajas and tamas, and entwineth is used for sattva. Now, all these things, what is the cause of our birth here? Thirst for tanha, thirst for life, existence. That brings us here. It is again qualified by all these qualities. Therefore, it is our thirst for existence on this life that brings us here. And during the process of evolution, we get entwined by all these three qualities. Because we identify ourselves with these qualities. The moment we are able to understand that the qualities are inherent, inherent in nature, and how they operate, perhaps we can know or find out the means by which we can control them, we can use them properly, and we can detach ourselves from its function. For that, we have to live the higher life. So before we go further, we will try to see something else, what these qualities are. It is not as if we have to shun or despise or desist the tamasic quality. It's essential. Tamas has to be transformed into rajas, rajas into sattvic. And these are necessary stages of evolution of man himself. You will see a little later how this is. One of the finest philosophical expositions of the three gunas, you find the wonderful mystery allegory, Dream of Ravan. Not only does it contain the philosophical exposition of the three gunas, it also contains the psychological exposition of the four avastas, Jagras, Swapna, Sushupti and Turiya. That is, waking, sleeping, deep sleep and Turiya, the spiritual state. We won't go into that. There is a brilliant piece of work where, you see, in a poetical form, the story of Ramayana is narrated, especially that of Ravana. It explains the dream of Ravana. And the rishis try to, you see, interpret the dreams, and it points out that Mandodari, prominent characteristic was tamas. Tamas simply means, yes, darkness, ignorance, etc. But it represents brute energy of substance, mere animal nature. And then, her nature was compatible to that of Ravana, because Ravana's main characteristic or quality, dominant quality, was also tamas. But the rishis say that at a later stage, when Ravana becomes passionate or active, becomes rajas, he would require a different companion. Namely, not one having purely tamasic quality, but of a higher quality. Mandodari is worried. But Rishi consoles her by saying, look here, don't get worried. You will have, yes, later on, a different kind of relationship with Ravana. As that of a master and disciple, Guru and Chela, which means there will be trust, loyalty, sympathy, gratitude. Whereas tamas quality is always forwarded for development through love and affection. Now, that means Mandavari's character is so finely depicted there that the Rishi says, later on, you will have a different kind of relationship. The moral advice is, or lesson is here, that how we should have an attitude of mind while treating people of a lower capacity. We should have understanding, sympathy, etc., love. Now, before we can try to understand the implications of the three qualities, they're explained, of course, it's very well explained in the 14th chapter, the 17th chapter, and partly in the 18th chapter also. You see, we have to find out the origin. Where's the origin of these three qualities? If you carefully study, that's why the 13th chapter, the sloka is very, very important. It says here, know that the prakriti or nature or purusha or the spirit are without beginning. And know that the passions and three qualities are sprung from nature. See, that means something peculiar to nature only, prakriti. Nothing to do with spirit. Spirit has no qualities. But spirit, when invested with matter, partakes of the qualities of prakriti. Because it's identified with the nature. Therefore, what happens is, the origin seems to be in the abstract, primordial, undifferentiated, eternal unity. Primordial substance itself. Unless it's inherent there, it can't suddenly come at the stage of manifestation with prakriti. Therefore, the origin seems to be in that mula prakriti, the undifferentiated matter, which is eternal unity. This unity gets divided into three qualities in manifestation. And while reflecting itself in time and space, through the magic prism of Maya, we have the result is numerous or numberless universes and differentiations of the universe. They are inherent. And this is very aspect inherent in nature itself and necessary for evolution. As I said, tamasic quality has in itself rajas and manas, sattva. One cannot have the only one and the other two missing. It is rajas, it is tamas which leads to rajas and rajas to sattva. So unfortunately we categorize them and separate them into three different things. They are three in one, one in three. So actually we look upon tamas as ignorance, darkness, brute energy. Failing to realize there is an inherent power in that, or energy. Energy of inertia, energy of substance, brute energy of a substance. Likewise, rajas is not simply passion or action. It has in itself a unique energy or power of action. Without that, nothing can move. Without the inertia, everything will be all the time moving. Likewise, this self-consciousness in a sattvic quality man, whatever, it is not merely goodness or wisdom. It has the power to be attracted by wisdom and knowledge. Therefore, each one has in its own state a peculiar kind of energy which is all the time radiantly developing. Depending upon the soul, occupant of the body. Well, from that point, once you understand this, there are inherent part and part of nature and it's inherent in man. Then you have to find out why do they bind us? What does it imprison the soul? This is the interaction of all these three qualities that is the cause of our imprisonment in the body. Because the knower in the body or the tiller in the body or chetrajna gets identified with these conditions. Failing to realize that he is none of these conditions, he is conditionless, unconditioned, unmodifiable, and yet he identifies himself with all these conditions. But we must also understand that man is not simply purely tamasic or rajasic or sattvic. He is a mixture of all the three. But any point in time, what happens, one of the three qualities may be predominant. At some time, he may be sattvic purely. Some other time, he might be purely rajasic. Third time, that means he could be a mixture of all the three, or two at least. This clearly explains the notes of the Gita in the 17th chapter. by Mr. Crosby, in the notes of the Gita. Now what happens is, when this happens, then this has to do with the moral qualities of moral characteristics of man also. Very important. That is why Mr. Crosby states in the notes very clearly, while the Western psychologists will talk about the mental conditions of states, the Eastern psychology, or the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, especially talks about moral states, which results in mental conditions. Unfortunately, it is not recognized by Western psychology at all. Therefore, all these qualities have very much to do with our moods and blues. Very important for us to understand this. It has to do with our moods and blues. Therefore, what happens is, you see, look here. Never we have some specific things here. Therefore, tamasic quality will have a predominance of gloominess, idleness, loneliness, inattention. When we are giving ourselves to these things or influenced by these things, we are tamasic in our character. Then, industrious, intemperate, immoderate desires or unrestrained. Then these are the characteristics of Rajas quality, which has imprisoned us. If happy, wise, still attached to the results of wisdom, it is sattvic quality. See, sattvic quality is good. What happens is, we are still attached to the results of the wise action. Something funny is said here, something contradictory in the second chapter of the Gita. Have you noticed it? Which appears on the surface contradictory. He talks about the Vedas, the assemblage of three qualities, etc., etc. Then he says, be thou free from these qualities, O Arjuna, be free from the pairs of opposites, and constant in the quality of sattva, free from worldly anxiety and desire to preserve present possessions, self-centered and uncontrolled by objects of mind and sense. He says, you have to raise yourself above the three qualities. Then also adds, constant in the quality of sattva. There is a contradiction there. But Mr. Judge explains, this contradiction is not there. What we have to do is, having attained the stage of sattva, we have to take refuge in its spiritual counterpart, the sattva, eternal reality, which is a stage of sitta prajna, who is not moved by stone or gem. He is above the pairs of opposites, etc., etc. Very important. See, having said that you should read yourself about the three qualities, he says, constant in the quality of sattva. I mean, why? Therefore, sattva has got its spiritual counterpart. That is, to realize, to have consciousness, spiritual existence while in a body. That's important. Then we have, what it says is, that means, in other words, what are the things that are characteristic of tamas? Distracted, unstable, rajas, restlessness of the characteristics. And then sattva, wise wisdom and action. Then, you see, culling from the three chapters, certain characteristics mentioned, not exactly the words there, but something akin to this. Tamas quality, we predominantly have absence of knowledge, feeling for others, motion, inertia. Moral basis of matter, animal life, but needed for rajas and tamas. Therefore, since moral qualities come in and influence our mind, and therefore the mental condition, our pranic currents are affected. After all, you see, mind, what is the basis of mind? Thoughts. If thoughts are all conditioned by the qualities and moods, then naturally the pranic currents are affected. In order to make this pranic current pure, then we should purify our thoughts. Detach the mind from the clutches of lower personality and therefore purify our thoughts. Therefore, moral elevation is a must. That is why we have the wonderful verses in the Yoga Aphorisms, where he states, the obstacles in the way of him who desires to attain concentration are sickness, languor, doubt, carelessness, laziness, addiction to objects of sense, erroneous perception. See, all these, most of them characteristics of tamas. Failure to attain any stage of abstraction, unsteadiness, instability in any state when attained. Then, he says in the next verse, the obstacles are accompanied by grief, distress, trembling and sighing. What can trembling and sighing do to your astral body? It's explained in another article by Mr. Judge on culture of concentration. Trembling and sighing. I don't have time to go into that. For the prevention of these, one truth should be dwelt upon. Any one truth. Any accepted truth which one approves is here meant. Then, he gives us a remedy. How to overcome these moods? Through the practice of benevolence, tenderness, complacency, and disregard for objects of happiness. How to detach our mind? You see, disregard for objects of happiness, grief, virtue, and vice, the mind becomes purified. This is how, by purifying our mind, we are changing our moral state. And therefore purifying our prana. The chief occasions for distraction of the mind are covetousness and aversion. And what aphorism means is, not the virtue and vice should be viewed with indifference by the student, but that he should not fix his mind with pleasure upon happiness or virtue, nor with aversion upon the grief or vice in others. And the practice of benevolence, tenderness and complacency beings brings about cheerfulness of mind. That is why in Buddhistic philosophy, Maitri Karuna, all these things have to be developed. Therefore, this is what is indicated in the voice of the silence as the Tiksha state, higher indifference. Now, therefore, is what happened. Moods are very much connected with these three qualities. Then what we have is, yes, we have culled here from the three chapters some of the aspects of the three qualities. Ignorant, tamasic nature is broadly ignorant, indifferent, lower small capacity, rash, heedlessness, low common sense, without saying no common sense, he said low common sense, no discrimination, concerned with mean and petty things, and thinks they are the only thing in life, and attached to them. Foolish, fearful, depressed, or moody, satisfied the mortification of the body. Those who mortify their flesh are Thomas. This is the tabernacle, Solomon's temple, where the deity resides. Lazy and idle, broadly speaking. See, these are culled from the three chapters. Then rajasic qualities are restless, overactive, wants many things, concerned with pleasures of the senses, and always wants to do something. Then sattvic quality, attached by knowledge and karma, rather attracted by knowledge and karma, he is steadfast, bright, calm and happy. All these things are all right. But in the case of sattvic person, what happens is, you see, he is attached to the results of his wise action. Therefore, he is entwined. That entwineth the soul with the body. Therefore, all these qualities are influencing us as long as we become victims of this. We get attached or identify ourselves with these conditions. Only when we know really the real nature of man and try to live according to that real nature, will we be able to get free ourselves from this influencing of these three qualities. There are some quotations here to indicate this. You see, regarding moods and all that, when you are in grief or in sorrow, you should always remember the Ishavasya Upanishad sloka. In him who knows that all spiritual beings are the same in kind with the spiritual being, what room can there be for delusion and what room for sorrow when he reflects upon the unity of spirit? Then we have already seen that quotation from the 13th chapter, but the last one sloka I didn't read. There it says, for spirit when invested with matter or prakriti experiences the qualities which proceed from prakriti. Its connection with these qualities is the cause of rebirth in good and evil wombs. The spirit in body, you see, look here, having said that, what influences the spirit and entwineth and imprisoneth the soul to the body, then the last sloka is very important. The spirit in the body is called Maheshwara, the great Lord, the spectator, the admonisher, the sustainer, the enjoyer, and also the Paramatma, highest soul. It means the sloka immediately tells us, although spirit when invested with matter partakes of the qualities that proceed from prakriti, it also says spirit is highest soul. Upadrishtva anumantascha bhakta bhokta maheshwara. It's also the great Lord. This is important for us. Unless you realize, you see, don't be carried away by the first sloka in that paragraph where it says, you see, the spirit partakes of the qualities of prakriti. But it is also the supreme spirit. The spirit in the body is called Maheshwara. The great Lord, the spectator, the admonisher, the sustainer, the enjoyer, and also the Paramatma, the highest soul. Then, you see, Janeshwari Maharaj's Gita notes, translated by Manusmriti, the standard work. We have got, it's a pertinent passage from that. You see, the qualities are not seen. The characteristics are manifest. And the analogy is given. Spring is not seen, but its results on trees are evident. When you see the flowers blooming, and the birds chirping, we know it's the month of Kusumakara flowers, spring. Spring is not seen, but its results and trees are evident. Similar to the soul, though unseen, separate from the attributes, gunas. The sun causes many things, such as the fading of the stars, the fire, the suryakanta, disappearance of darkness, and the opening out of lotus. Sun causes all this. And yet the sun is untouched by any of the phenomena. That means how the soul or the spirit in man is untouched by all these troubles. And yet, it's entwined, it imprisoneth all this by becoming victim to the body and its qualities. So is the soul inside the body, the fount of real power and unconcerned with actions. It is the light of the soul which discloses the gunas. It is the prowess of the soul which increases them, and yet the soul is unconcerned. When wisdom brings that realization, I mean, this is so, when wisdom brings its realization of this, the man is said to be beyond gunas. That means that Siddha Prajna stage, where the ascetic has its peculiar power, which cannot be explained, as the verse in the Patanjali's Yoga Aphorism says. Then we have the wonderful passage from the notes of the Bhagavad Gita, which says, the highest path, that which leads to emancipation, is separation of the three qualities. In fact, 14th chapter talks only about that. the means for separation. And the last paragraph in that chapter indicates to you how it is. Unless you reach that state where free from the pairs of opposites and above the three qualities, you can't obtain wisdom. Of course, there is in reality no separation possible in the ordinary sense of the word. Separation here means non-identification. That's beautifully expressed by Mr. Crosby. Non-identification. Because we all identify ourselves with the body, Namarupa. And therefore, influenced all the time by the qualities that proceed from this body. It is ahankara, self-identifying attachment with the ever-changing forms, conditions and relations of physical existence that makes the real separation and binds men to rebirth in the world, which they make one of infinitely more suffering than joy. He who sanapandu, who doth not hate these three qualities, illumination, action, delusion. This is from the 14th chapter. When they appear, not longeth for them when they disappear. Who, like one who is of no party, sitteth as one unconcerned about the three qualities, and undisturbed by them, who being persuaded that the three qualities exist, is not moved by them, who is of equal mind in pain and pleasure, with those who like or dislike, the same whether praised or blamed, equally minded in honor and disgrace, the same toward friendly or unfriendly side, engaging only in necessary actions, such a one hath surmounted the qualities. This is the same thing as we find the echo in the second chapter of the Gita. The man confirmed in spiritual knowledge, sthaprajna. Then, this is beautifully expressed in different words in that wonderful mystic book, The Dream of Ravan. When a person becomes a god, how is he? What is his state of mind? True being is universal, uniform, constant, unchanging, and eternal. See here. True being is universal, uniform, constant, unchanging, and eternal. And is termed Satchit Ananda Ghana. A compacted being, thought, joy, being culminated into consciousness. Conscious thought returning and entering into being, worketh eternal in the depths, but knoweth not itself. Thought generated the eternal center, giveth forth the great utterance, and called out, I am Brahm. Being becometh thus revealed unto itself in thought and the being, an eternal joy arisen. And these three are one ghana, or solidarity of eternal life. Filling all things, and yet minuter than atom. This is the true neya, or object of wisdom, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13. If we have a few minutes before taking up your questions. What? Would somebody repeat the question, please? What is the what word is that? Chaitanya Purusha. Chaitanya in the sense of mind, I suppose. Am I right? What is the meaning of Chaitanya? Anyone? Anyway, you see, Purusha is the ultimate reality. The ideation aspect that is expressed in all universe, the pervading intelligence. It contains also the chit in the sense of that mind. Therefore, it is also called or termed in one thing, Satchit Ananda, unconditioned consciousness, of which we are all emanations, but we are conditioned consciousness. Now this conditioned consciousness, you to our, that spirit, identifying itself with the body and therefore with the condition. It has to again become unconditioned. Therefore Purusha is an aspect of that unknown reality. And Prakriti is an aspect of the abstract matter or chaos or primordial matter. Pardon? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. See, that is where the confusion arises. See, sattva derived from sat in the terms of goodness, wisdom, knowledge. In that sense, one. But there are two aspects. The one, the metaphysical, and the ordinary physical. In terms, that is why that sloka seems to be contradictory in the second chapter. Being conscious in the quality of sattva. See, that, having said this, he also says, rise above that. That means, having reached that quality of attaining or attracted by wisdom and knowledge, don't get attached to the results. When you are able to take refuge in the spiritual counterpart of that sattva, which is that of a satya siddha prajna stage, which when you become one with Satchidananda, that is the stage which is described in the very first sloka of the 14th chapter of the Gita. The two slokas, in fact. See here what it says here. I will explain further the sublime spiritual knowledge superior to all others by knowing which all the sages have attained to supreme perfection on the dissolution of the body. What is that perfection? They take sanctuary in this wisdom and having attained to my state of Siddha Prajna, of Satchidananda, they are not born again even at the new evolution, nor are they disturbed at the time of general destruction. It's a high stage of a nirvani. That can be reached, that is the Siddha stage, that can be reached only when you are able to free yourself of the three qualities. That is why Mr. Judge writes that you should take refuge in your spiritual counterpart. Sattva yabhav. That is, in other words, take refuge in pure sat of Satchidananda. Huh? Ghana. Ghana means element. Simply, or element. Solidarity. So in this particular case, it's solidarity of eternal. Yeah, I think it, here itself comes here. Solidarity. Wait a minute. Compacted being. Thought, joy, being culminating into consciousness. Three are one ghana. That is unity. Or solidarity of eternal life. That is the meaning. From there, the other word also comes, ghana, the weight also. The time is up, I think we have to close this. And then we will close it with a closing thought from second chapter of the Gita. Or even, why not? What is the characteristic of a person who is confirmed in spiritual knowledge? Krishna speaks. A man is said to be confirmed in spiritual knowledge when he forsaketh every desire which entereth into his heart, and of himself is happy and content to the self. Through the self, his mind is undisturbed in adversity. He is happy and contented in prosperity, and he is stranger to anxiety, fear and anger. Such a man is called a muni. When in every condition receives each event, whether favorable or unfavorable, with an equal mind which neither likes nor dislikes, his wisdom is established. And having met good or evil, neither rejoices at one nor is cast down by the other. He is confirmed in spiritual knowledge when, like a tortoise, he can draw in all his senses and restrain them from their wanted purposes. Thank you.
એને તો કઈ લેવાનો સવાલ જ નતો, એટલે અત્યારે 2000 મૂક્યા પાછા આપ્યા. હવે હું કઈ માથા પચી નથી જતી. તારે જે જોઈતું હોય તે તું કે છે, તને આવું જોઈતું હોય તો આવું બી માલતી ને ખબર છે આ ક્યાં છે, તમે લોકો બી જઈ જઈ શકશો. કાલે
બસ હમણાં એવું કહેવાની આવે.